The Rockford Symphony Orchestra Music Director finalist season begins this Saturday, January 15th at 7:30 p.m. at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. This is Phil Davidson, and joining me today is Music Director finalist Yaniv Attar. Did I get that right?
Perfect.
Thank you. Who will be presenting Rhythm and Beauty this Saturday. So welcome. We're so happy to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Phil.
Well, I suppose this is very logical, but why don't we begin by hearing something about you, where you're from, what you have been doing in the musical world, and anything else that you would like to tell us.
So I was born in Israel, grew up there until I was 18, fell in love with music at a quite early age. So when I was 15, I was already at the high school of the Music Academy in Jerusalem. And then my path started with my very extended period of study. I went to London to the Royal College of Music, where I was majoring in classical guitar and minoring in conducting. I did the same thing when I moved to New York City. I went to Juilliard School and did, again, guitar and conducting. And then I decided to focus solely on conducting. And I moved to Montreal, Canada, where I went to McGill, and I had to do another master. I like collecting degrees in conducting, and then I stayed there and did the doctorate at McGill. When I finished that, it was time to finally look for a job. So I went, I won the assistant conductor position with the Alabama Symphony Orchestra in Birmingham, and I spent a few years there and taught at the university. And then the first music director job that I received was in 2013. I moved to Bellingham, Washington, which is north of Seattle, and I became the music director of the Bellingham Symphony Orchestra. A year after, I won another position in Pennsylvania with the Pennsylvania Chamber Orchestra. So those are my two main orchestras that I work with. And then I also, I want to call it a quarter or a half music director with Northwest Sinfonietta. It's a chamber orchestra in Tacoma. And they decided to stay away from the regular music director model. So they don't have a regular conductor. Every few years, they have two or three conductors, and they call them artistic partners. And then, you know, after one term or two terms, they just keep changing. So it keeps things very fresh. So that's the third orchestra I'm associated with. And, you know, in between, I guest conduct when I can. And pretty much it.
Well, you have quite a trip between Washington and Pennsylvania then.
Yes, that's quite a commute. And, you know, with the time zone and everything. And it takes a whole day. By the time I leave in the morning at 5, I get there at, you know, 10 or 11 at night. It's quite a commute.
Well, I was reading a little bit about your activities in Bellingham. And can you tell us a little bit about Harmony and Discord? It's kind of a unique concert series that you have in Bellingham. And also, what was the goal in presenting such a series?
So when I did my doctorate at McGill, one of the topics that I was researching was music by composers who died during the Holocaust or in that era, or music that was banned by the Nazis in Europe. And I came across some incredible music that, you know, to this day, I'm still surprised why is it not performed a lot. And I said with the executive director then, I said, why don't we do a concert, you know, featuring some of these works? And he said, okay, what would you like to program? And I said, well, I would like to do this and this and this piece and this piece. And I came with an incredible amount of music that cannot fit into one concert. And then he said to me, well, why don't we make it a multi-year series? And that's how this series was born, and it's really music that was written under oppression. Some of it actually written in the camps, But it's a very small percentage, maybe, you know, 3% of that music. But a lot of this music was written before, during, and a lot of music that was banned at the time. And it's a music that was lost. And, you know, big part of me of wanting to do this series is that I wanted to share great music with our audience, because in a way we have such a huge gap in music history. There's an entire list of incredible composers whose music was totally wiped out. And we have a hole, we have a gap. We have all these wonderful music that people don't know, that people need to discover. Whether they like it or not, it's something else. But the goal of this series was to renew the interest in this music and make sure that these works become an inseparable part of our repertoire by presenting them in normal concerts, you know. So, for example, next month I'm conducting Reno Chamber Orchestra, and we're doing a Dvorak Czech suite, you know, standard repertoire. Then we will do a piece by my favorite composer from that era, Erwin Schulhoff, a concerto for piano and flute. And then the second half will be Beethoven's Second Symphony. So my goal is to, like, eventually have this as, this is our repertoire. This is part of music history, and we should pay attention to it.
It sounds wonderful. Wonderful. Okay, now, so you're in Washington, you're in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So what motivated you to reach out to RSO when you heard about the music director opening?
You know, it was such a coincidence. On the same day that I heard about this position, I didn't read about it somewhere, two musicians that I know told me about it. One musician who used to play in the orchestra many years ago and now lives in Seattle, and the other one is a soloist that was featured with the RSO. Mm-hmm. And they both emailed me the same day and said, you have to look up this orchestra. So I looked it up. I did all the research, read about the orchestra, followed the orchestra on social media, the website, went into even their 990 to see, you know, how big is the board, how they're doing financially. And I discovered a really healthy organization that seems to have incredible support and loyal audience in Rockford and beyond. And I was really impressed with everything the orchestra was doing, with the level of the orchestra from whatever recording I could get. And actually, COVID time, as challenging as it was, I was able to see a lot of recorded material because, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of the musical activities went online. And especially during COVID, I was really impressed at how much the orchestra tried to maintain a constant connection with all their patrons and with music education and whatnot. And I said, this seems like a wonderful place to be and to make music. So I said, all right, let's send an application along with 200, actually there were more than 200, but it's, I mean, it's amazing how long this process is. I mm-hmm. applied in 2019.
Really?
We're 2022 now.
Oh,
and the process just begins.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, COVID, of course, kind of slowed everything down.
Right, right.
So we know that the music director conducts the orchestra, plans the concerts. What other facets of the position do you feel are important as it relates to the symphony orchestra and of course, the community?
So I think Rockford is a perfect example, and Rockford Symphony Orchestra is not the only one in this boat. Many of the musicians of the Rockford Symphony, like many other regional orchestras, don't come from Rockford. And in many ways, the conductor... especially in America, this is something that is, especially in America, is in many ways the face of the orchestra, representing the orchestra in fundraising events, in community events, connecting to other community leaders, participating in, I don't know, school activities and things like this. This is the conductor is really representing the orchestra in, on so many levels and so many activities. So, and again, especially in America, the off-the-podium tasks that the music director has are almost just as important and really an inseparable part of being a music director in an American orchestra. So, yeah, this is, I would say they're almost equal. I mean, you know, the audience mostly see me on the podium in the concert, but there's a lot of work off the podium and behind the scenes that the music director needs to have.
Okay, let's talk about Rhythm and Beauty.
Uh-huh.
Why that title?
Yeah. When I talk about beauty, it's mostly about melodic beauty, and it really relates mostly to, I mean, to all the pieces, but mostly to Tchaikovsky. Because I think, to me personally, Tchaikovsky is a composer that has the most incredible talent to writing the most beautiful music we have in the repertoire. You know, when you think of Beethoven didn't write great melodies. You know, Beethoven's most famous tune is ta-da-da-da.
Yeah, right.
I mean, what is that? you know, you wouldn't go to a friend and say, hey, listen to this beautiful melody. But Beethoven's incredible talent is how he made a symphony, a whole symphony out of those four notes. Tchaikovsky is really writes the most incredible melodies you will ever hear. And in the other pieces, like the Rodrigo, which also has unbelievable, beautiful melodies, and all the pieces are also connected because they have such tremendous rhythmic energy in all of them. And I thought these combination of rhythm and beauty of melodies are going to be such a wonderful way to open 2022. You know, I try to look at it as this concert away from the lens of I'm being a candidate for music director, because this is still a concert. People are still coming to hear the Rockford Symphony. I mean, the whole music director thing is another element, but it's still, it needs to be a concert. It needs to be electrifying, entertaining, engaging, inspiring. So I was trying to find what will be the best way to open 2022, especially after, you know, I shouldn't say after COVID because it feels like we're in the middle of it, but that's what drew me to program this music at this time.
Well, the first piece is Danzon number 2, mm-hmm, by Arturo Marquez. So tell us something about Marquez. I'm not that familiar with him. And for what is he most known?
So Arturo Marquez is still a living composer. Not that old, actually. And he was, you know, he received training as a serious composer, quite modern and avant-garde music, experimental music. But the pieces that he became famous from were the 8 danzons that he wrote for orchestra. You know, he was a son of a mariachi a musician. There's a history of folk musicians in his family. So this is probably a lot of music that he heard at a young age. And he wrote these 8 danzons, and he really became famous with those, but only in Mexico, not elsewhere. And then there's a very famous youth orchestra. It's called the Simón Bolívar Youth Orchestra, conducted by, well, back then, Gustavo Dudamel, who is currently the music director of the Los Angeles Philharmonic, one of the big stars in conducting today. And he took that youth orchestra on tour in U.S. And Europe, and the danzón number 2 was the one that they played. And, you know, in our age, when everything is recorded and shared on social media and everything, it went viral, and all of a sudden, every orchestra in the world is playing that piece. They've even made arrangements for band. I mean, it's really captured the world so quickly. It's amazing. So, you know, it became world famous, but now people are playing other works by him. Recently, I think his violin concerto has been played a lot. Fantastic composer, and it's a really fun piece.
So I was reading about Dan Zahn a little bit, and I think it's referred to as Mexico's second national anthem.
Uh-huh.
Why is it called that?
You know, funny enough, two of the works on this concert are titled the unofficial national anthem of. So the Marquez, the Danzón, is the unofficial national anthem of Mexico, and then the Rodrigo second movement is referred to for a long time as the unofficial anthem of Spain. And I think when there's music that is, connects to so many people so quickly, so when people think about Spanish music or about Mexican music, and all of a sudden the first thing that comes up to your head is that is this kind of music, is mm-hmm. it's these melodies or the emotions that they evoke immediately, then immediately it's being connected as something, you know, it's like, yeah, it's the unofficial national anthem.
Can you give us a little description of what we will hear?
In the Marquez?
Yes.
So there's really, it moves between two characters, and it really goes back and forth between them. One of them, and they're very characteristic of the dance on in general. One of them, they're really slow, evocative and nostalgic kind of melodic, beautiful, beautiful. At the beginning, it's presented by the clarinet with some tangoish rhythms in the percussion section. They're having a lot of fun there. You know, when there's a busy percussion section, it's going to be a good piece, right?
Yeah, yes.
And then it goes from there very organically into this really wild dance rhythm that, you know, I'm a terrible dancer, but even me, you know, I want to get up and start dancing. I mean, it's so intoxicating. I mean, it's fantastic. So it goes back and forth between it, and it's just so much fun for both the musicians and the audience.
Well, maybe the audience will be up dancing in the aisles.
I would encourage it.
It's been known to happen.
Why not?
Well, then we move on to, and I'm going to try very hard to pronounce this correctly, Concierto de Aranjuez.
Yes.
By Joaquin Rodrigo.
Uh-huh.
Now, I know one thing that I read is that Rodrigo lost his sight when he was very young.
Age three, he got, do you say in English, diphtheria? And it made him basically almost blind.
Mm. Well, how did he establish himself as a composer? What's his style of music?
You know, he went through the regular studies as any composer would do. He was a really good pianist as well, and he wrote all his pieces actually in Braille, and then they were transcribed from that. But you know, he studied at the university, he studied with great teachers, he actually became a known musicologist and held a position at the university. So he was quite known. What's amazing about him, not just that he was blind, but guitar is a very difficult instrument to write to if you don't play it. You know, harp is the same thing. If you don't play it and if you don't know it really well, it's really hard to write for. And he had this incredible talent as a non-guitarist to write an amazing amount of collection of music for the guitar that sounds so idiomatic. And the Concierto de Aranjuez that we're going to perform, it was written in 1939, and it's really the piece that brought the guitar up in the concert world to, this is a serious concert instrument, not just, folky things. So as guitarists, we are forever grateful for Rodrigo for, you know, bringing the guitar up to the music world in that way.
Well, how, beyond the guitar, how would you describe this piece?
So the first and the third movement are very, very rhythmic. They like, you know, typical dances, Spanish dances, very light, very fun. But the heart of the piece is really the second movement. This is what it's known for. With a beautiful melody, the guitar start is an accompaniment to the most famous English horn solo in the repertoire. the climax of the movement comes at the end of that movement, and this is what brought that title of the unofficial anthem of Spain. It's so dramatic and beautiful. And years later, people discovered it wasn't known when it was written or performed the first time, but years later, the wife of Rodrigo was telling the world that what inspired him at that time, they just had a miscarriage of in a pregnancy, mm-hmm. and it was written as a kind of a response to that. And when you hear the music and you think about what inspired him, it's even more heart-wrenching.
Well, you were talking about Tchaikovsky earlier.
Uh-huh.
So the last piece in your program is Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 4 in F minor. And, of course, we're all familiar with Tchaikovsky.
Mm-hmm.
But can you refresh us a little bit on his background and his upbringing?
Sure. Interesting, you know, when people hear the name Tchaikovsky, I mean, throughout history and even today, the first thing you think of is the Nutcracker,
mm-hmm.
Ballet composer, or some of the operas he wrote. But Tchaikovsky really struggled as a symphonic composer. He never thought that he was good enough as a symphonist. He wrote 6 symphonies, and it's really amazing because it's really split in the middle. The first 3 symphonies were almost kind of experiments for him, and if I add my personal opinion, not very successful ones. But from the 4th one, it's like he really had a breakthrough as a composer. And, you know, they say that every composer, I mean, you know, I'm a conductor, so I'm obsessed with Beethoven like all other conductors. But they say that every composer after Beethoven wrote symphonies in his shadow. And Tchaikovsky is a perfect example. And he says so in his letters. The 4th symphony, the F minor symphony, is a total homage to Beethoven's 5th symphony that we mentioned. You know, Beethoven 5th is ta-ta-ta-ta, that kind of fanfaric mm-hmm. thing, which gave it the nickname Fate, which Tchaikovsky 4th symphony has the same nickname, Fatum, Fate. And you hear that fanfare at the beginning, tom, ta-da-da-dum, pom-pom, which sounds similar with the repeated notes to Beethoven 5th. And he tries to use it in the same way Beethoven did throughout the symphony. But I think what Tchaikovsky took most from Beethoven that is so incredible throughout the symphony is not just the use of this theme throughout the first movement, and it even comes in the very last movement, so there's thematic connection between the movements, but also the symphony opens, just like in Beethoven 5, in a minor key, in a quite frightening and tragic kind of music, and it ends in F major. So in Beethoven, it opens in C minor, ends in C major, and it sounds very hopeful and very, you know, inspiring. And so is the Tchaikovsky. The ending is so triumphant. There's no other words to describe it. And this is something I would say is very Beethovenian. This is why the Tchaikovsky 4 is such a classic. And it's amazing to think that at his time, it had bad reviews. It wasn't accepted as a great work. And today we can't think of our repertoire without Tchaikovsky's symphonies, especially the 4th.
Well, you answered my next question, which was a description of what you're going to hear in the 4th. So
there are some more stuff. I mean,
go right ahead.
Yeah, the second movement has one of my favorite oboe solos. It's just wonderful. But the 3rd movement, I think, is the most fun movement in the entire symphony. In that movement, the string section is not using their bow at all. They're only plucking the finger with the fingers. It's called pizzicato. And actually, the movement is pizzicato ostinato. It's like a fun game at a party. So the strings starts by themselves for an entire section, plucking and you know, moving the melody from one section to another very fast, with a lot of very sections that are full of humor, It makes me even want to laugh and dance. And all of a sudden, without any warning, they pass it on to the wind section, which goes on their own thing. And then they pass it on to the brass section, which, and then they play on their own. So all these sections are separate. And at the end, he brings everybody together. You know, it's kind of the end of the party. It's really fun. It's just a lot of fun for the orchestra and for the listeners. It's a very unique movement. I don't think anybody had, any composer until that time, had such imagination to write something like that. And then the ending is just so energetic and rhythmic and, like I said in the previous question, triumphant. It's just an incredible way to end a symphony.
Sounds like the audience is going to have a blast.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to welcome you again, and we hope that you enjoy your visit here this week. But are there any final comments you would like to make to the listeners?
I already had one rehearsal with the orchestra, and I was so impressed with your Rockford Symphony Orchestra. They are such a jewel in this community. And I always say there's nothing better than to experience music live. So if you feel comfortable in these difficult times to hear a live concert, you don't want to miss it. The soloist is fantastic, Daniel Bolshoi.
I was going to ask you about him.
He's a wonderful guitarist. I think one of the most exciting guitarists today. And he was really going to mesmerize you with his playing. So it's a fantastic program. Come check out, even if you've never been to a symphony concert, actually this would be a great one to go to.
Well, you've been listening to a conversation with RSO Music Director and finalist Yaniv Attar. And tickets are still available for this concert, and it's called Rhythm and Beauty, which happens this coming Saturday, January 15th at 7:30 p.m. And, of course, where else but the fabulous Coronado Performing Arts Center. Remember, you can also purchase a plan for all 9 concerts during the Music Director finalist season, or you can choose a flex plan for fewer concerts. So be a part of the choice. For tickets and more information, go to rockfordsymphony.com or call 815-965-0049. This is Phil Davidson, and thank you for listening.